This is the Hard Truth of Tony Schaefer, powered by Six Sour, Never Settle. I had a choice of what I carried in combat. I always carry the best. I still carry the best. The best is Six Sour, Never, Ever Settle. We are on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network, also available on the America Out Loud Podcast Network. Check us out, Project Sentinel, projectsentinel.com.net. And we're on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Rumble, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we have a new sponsor this week. That's righty. Protect your peace of mind and your money. One of the things we want to do is make sure that we try our best to educate you, our audience, on things you need to know. One of those things is the upcoming war on cash. So one of the things we want to do is get you guys to link up with people and have resources that will help you understand what you're facing regarding the economic winds that are about to hit us. So from Swiss America, discover a few simple steps on what it takes to establish a path of security and peace of mind. So this is a publication called The Secret War on Cash. And man, I guess if you're Bonnie Willis, here's a constant war because you have to take a stash, right? You have to put it in your mattress. So I don't know if that's the right answer or not. That's why you need to get this book, The Secret War on Cash. So you need to call 800-289-2646. Again, that's 800-289-2646. That's Swiss America. And understand more about the war on cash, what you need to do to protect yourself. Again, that's 800-289-2646. And without further ado, we're going to move right into the show. Today, we're joined by Patrick Byrne. Patrick is the author of a book, Danger Close, which I love that title. Domestic Extremist Number One Comes Clean. So, and he's also the former CEO of Overstock.com. But in his book, it's a narrative that seamlessly blends his entrepreneurial prowess with covert government operations. And he was a visionary founder of Overstock.com. Patrick, I bought stuff from your organization. So kudos for you. It was a great idea.
Did it come on time? Was it a good service?
It was great. It was no. This is long before I knew you. And I always think it's cool when I get to meet someone who's really like successful. And dude, it worked. It worked great. The advertising was easy. It came up. It popped up with an opportunity. The price was great. It's like, oh my gosh, this is great. And so the idea of taking things which were available, but people didn't have the access to the market to develop, you were that bridge. It was a win-win. And so just kudos for you for figuring that out and being successful with it.
It's better. Well, it just shows it's better to be lucky than smart.
Well, we're going to talk about both today. So it's great to meet you. We've never met in real life, but we've talked, I think, or we have a lot of mutual friends, I guess is the way of putting it. And one of the pains that you and I share that I think has been a frustrating point is, I'll just throw it out there to begin with, Wikipedia. Wikipedia sucks. And the thing is, you know, you and I have a following. We've been around. You've written a book. We're going to talk about the book in a bit. But I notice that if you or anyone else dares challenge the collective bureaucracy, aka the deep state, man, they go nuts. I mean, they destroyed my book, Operation Darkheart. First 10,000 copies, they bought and destroyed because I went against some of the things they did. No, this was back 10 years ago. This is a New York Times bestseller. I was cleared by the army. We had to fight in court. But we ended up, you know, basically they got really upset because I called them out. It's like, dude, we could have stopped 9/11. Well, we don't want to talk about that. Dude, you screwed up in Afghanistan. You put us on a path to nation building instead of winning. You know, I just did a thing on that yesterday. So anytime anyone decides they're going to go against the popular direction or their overwhelming belief or narrative, you get attacked. So tell us about a little bit about your Wikipedia experience. And, you know, you and I share this nonsense.
Well, it's the deep state. I think there is an oligarchy that's taken over America. It has two wings. One is the deep state. One is the Wall Street financial elite. 2005 to 2008, I started calling it the Wall Street financial elite. I knew a crash was coming. I knew exactly the reason. When Alan Greenspan got up in front of Congress in October of 2008 when everything was collapsing and he explained what was going on, he named exactly the issue. Everyone had been ignoring me for 3 years, but it was the an issue that I've been screaming about. Since I started bringing public attention to it, something really funny happened on Wikipedia in 05. And there's a British publication called The Register, which wrote a series of articles that you can still find, where they documented this very strange phenomenon. There were 6 million articles on Wikipedia that were governed by one constitution, but there was a completely unique constitution to govern one page out of 6 million, the page on Patrick Byrne. And if you want to look these articles up, just Google Wikipedia Black Helicopter Circle Utah Traverse Mountain, and you'll find 4 or 5 articles. It was the biggest civil war in Wikipedia history. It's because I had this truth about something that was going on Wall Street that they needed covered up. And it's the truth. It's the thing that actually brought about the 08 collapse, according to Greenspan.
Yeah.
So since then, now I expect that constitution, which was kind of Orwellian, has now applies to hundreds or thousands of us. But back 18 years ago, there was one guy out of 6 million who had a special constitution for him, and that was me.
So it's interesting that the other thing, too, that if you get under their skin, you know it. Because they, like you point out, you were one of the first guys they devoted resources on. It's like, man, this guy is really a danger. And it's so funny that the more you get them upset, the more they actually amplify your message. And right now, what you've said, people know, people see it. They basically, I think, do themselves a disservice by going after people as they do. And I'm not complaining. They by going after me, turned my book into a New York Times bestselling. It's like, yeah, okay. You know, I've had friends of mine come to me. It's like, hey, how can we get the government to be upset with us so they want to buy our book?
Have you ever heard of this? They call it the Streisand effect.
Yeah, exactly.
When you try
exactly
like that, and people find out it's being suppressed, talk to it.
It's nuts. So let's talk about your book. So Danger Close, Domestic Extremism, Number One, Comes Clean. So one of the things I want to like do a tease for people to get to know. Now, I've read excerpts. I haven't read the whole thing, but I can tell you that there's some really cool stuff. And let me say this. I don't know you. And I don't know, I did not participate in any of the events in the books, but I've been in similar events. I've seen similar things. And the way you portray these things, I think it's completely credible because, like I said, Patrick, I've been in similar situations. I've been in similar rooms. I've been in meetings with Mike Flynn that were off the record, that things happened. I've been in meetings with the director of CIA over things back when Tenet was director. So I don't doubt the way you portray it. But what I find fascinating is the fact that, you know, you're going to get shot at again, not literally, hopefully, but you're going to get shot at by the fact you wrote it. So go ahead, talk about that a little bit.
Well, why don't I tell you, it's a very complicated book that describes a series of 4 events. I was at the center of the Russian collusion delusion, the Hillary Clinton scandal, and this coup. I can test it. And so there's 20 or 30 pages in the book that give enough of my background that explain who I am. And so, and another 20 pages or so that explain I've had this kind of alternative life trying to assist the U.S. government whenever I could be of small assistance. I'm not a spy. I never worked for the CIA or anybody, but I just try to provide assistance in law enforcement and often at sort of an intellectual, they ask an academic level. But once in a while, they've asked me to be involved in peace events. And I had a TSSCI clearance because of all that. I'll give you one story. I'll walk through one story in detail that I hope your folks will like. My handlers came to me one day around Thanksgiving 2015, and they told me the FBI has another mission for you. I'd been working on setting up the Russian collusion hoax for them. And I remember that Russian redhead, Maria Butina. I had an affair with her reporting back to the FBI and steering. We'll get back to that. They told me they needed me. Yeah. Not better than crawling through the mud and brag. And Maria is a great girl. But anyway, she wrote the preface to my book, by the way. Mike Flynn wrote the foreword and Maria Butina, the convicted Russian, wrote the preface. They asked me to bribe Hillary Clinton. And this is what happened. They told me I was sitting with several federal agents. And they said, the FBI needs your assistance in, they're going after Hillary Clinton. There's 2 groups going after. One is going after the emails. We all know that's a whitewash. There's a group in New York going after finances. And they really want to get her, Patrick. And evidence has come in that they've been prevented from setting her up in a sting. by Comey, but evidence has come in that has forced his hand, and now they have permission to set him up in a sting. They're reaching out to you, Patrick. They want you to bribe Hillary Clinton. There is a foreign government, Azerbaijan, and I revealed this in the book, was Azerbaijan, who I happen to like. We're on good terms with Azerbaijan, but they wanted to bribe Hillary Clinton. It turned out to be $18 million, and my mission was, Patrick, you have to find somewhere in the world, there's going to be a room. In the next 2 months, there's going to be a room, and Hillary Clinton is going to walk into that room, and the bagman from Azerbaijan is going to walk into that room. They spend 10 minutes alone together and then leave. You pull that together any way you want. And I said, sir, I can do that, but I'll be bribing people and such. And they said, that's okay. And I said, well, this might be one of those rare occasions I need one of your acts otherwise illegal letters. And you probably know what that is, Tony. You want to explain that to the public, what an acts otherwise illegal letter is?
Well, look, I participated in a number of things which were completely illegal and under our law, but I would have to go to any number of organizations within the government, one of those being OFAC, who often would give me essentially get out of jail letter free, basically saying, yeah, you're doing something illegal, but the government, if in case something goes wrong, we're underwriting what you're doing. That's essentially what it is.
So that conversation was around late November 2015. Yeah. On January 4th, so I'm going to skip. You can use your imagination, Tony, about how a man goes to Azerbaijan, demonstrates that he's the kind of man who can and will do things like this, finds the bad man.
I get it.
I can promise on January 14th, 2016, that bagman and Hillary Clinton met in Washington, D.C., and at her instructions, this is how the meeting was done. She was in a hotel. She was on the 8th floor, I think, and her assistant was on the 5th. She had a limousine at 9 a.m. The bagman was brought in at 8:30, and he went up to her assistant's room on the 5th. At 8:47, she went out of her room and got in the elevator like she's going to the ground floor, but she got off on the 5th to go check on her assistant. She gets to that room. The assistant steps out. She had a 10-minute meeting in the room. Then she stepped out, went down. She was in her car by 9:02. It's not in her schedule, but the morning of January 14th, 2016, Azerbaijan bribed $18 million to Hillary Clinton, and she accepted. Now, here's where it gets tricky. 3 days later, I met with the agents, and they told me I had to forget it happened. They had to forget it all happened. You're so quick. I was still naive. I loved these guys. I didn't get to there. They said, what's gone on, Patrick, is this has all been reanalyzed from the top, and we realize this is – mid-January 2016, they said, it's clear Hillary's going to be president. Nothing's going to stop that. So first thing she's going to do is send her people over to the FBI and say, who was part of investigating Hillary?
Exactly.
And whoever was going to be destroyed. That includes us and our chain of command and includes you too, Patrick. So this mission has been scrubbed from the highest level. So I thought about that a couple of weeks. Didn't sound quite right. Does that sound quite right to you? They could have figured that out before they had me do it. So we met again, and this time there was someone from John Brennan's. John Brennan had an emissary in the room. Now, just to be clear, I never worked for the CIA, and my
I know how these things work. I get it. You're right. I mean, I've been in meetings like this. Trust me.
But they told me that there was a 2008 law that lets the CIA director sign a piece of paper and take over the FBI on certain circumstances. And he had done that on everything related to Russia. And I was involved in the whole Russia Marie thing. So now this FBI, now this emissary, I don't know, he was James Comey and John Brennan's go-between, was going to sit in all our meetings. And they said, and I told him, it didn't sit well with me. I don't understand why you can't prosecute it. We can have her indicted next. I thought it was unfair to the Democrats. I said, look, we spent the 90s with a Democrat. Just fair disclosure, in 2004, I was the largest donor to Hillary in Utah.
Yeah,
it was kind of a coincidence. The Democrats came and asked me to run for Congress, and I said no, but I gave them $25,000, and it showed up as something to her. So, they told me that story, and when I went back and said that's not sitting well with me, this is what they told me. And if you listen to this, Tony, I'm sure you get it all already, but your viewers, your listeners, will understand the last 8 years in a way they haven't before. The first week of February, this conversation happened. They said, Patrick, what's really going on is this. President Obama has his people across the federal bureaucracy, but especially the Department of Justice. Hillary is going to be president for 8 years, and nothing's going to change that. But while she's there, think of there as being a Bunsen burner. at the heart of the DOJ. Remember your high school chemistry, your Bunsen burners? The information about the bribe, you know, about is going to sit on that Bunsen burner. The hand on the Bunsen burner is going to be one of Barack Obama's people. If Hillary's a good girl and defends Obamacare, that flame stays low. If she's a bad girl and thinks for herself, it gets turned up. That way, Barack Obama is going to manage Hillary Clinton for 8 years. Then she steps down and Michelle's going to run. And Patrick, that's the plan. Turns out this plan was called by Brennan Komen Obama Operation Snow Globe. It was like a Christmas snow globe they were putting Hillary in that they could shake up for 8 years. My bribe was the lure, the bait to lure her to step into the snow globe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the hook.
That was it. Yeah, that's one of four fabulous stories in the book.
Well, so I've read parts of this story and I highly recommend it. And this is one of the things too. People don't understand how this stuff is really done. I mean, look, I used to be, my Bond moment is in the spy museum. You can Google Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, but I can tell you, Patrick, the most intense espionage meetings are more along the lines of what you're talking about than James Bond stuff. It's these quiet meetings in hotels where, someone's wandering down the road, the corridor, and they're going to their assistant's room to check on them. It's not on the agenda. No, I see all this, matter of fact. And so, look, I was asked to do an off-the-books operation to get Bo Bergdahl back. I was actually negotiating with the Pakistani Intelligence Service via a track two that I enlisted one of my dear friends, Walter Jones, Congressman Walter Jones, and General Tony Zinni was inadvertently included because we had to have cover. And then I was negotiating with the Pakistani ISI to get Bergdahl back. And it was so funny. You'll appreciate the humor. I'm actually fighting in court the First Amendment lawsuit against my book. You know, they don't want to give me access to my book because it's classified. And I'm sitting in a skiff later that day reading beyond top secret messages that I'm having to coordinate on in a skiff just down the street in the Federal Reserve. So it's kind of like, They're pretending I can't have classified information because it's my book is classified, even though we won. But at the same time, I'm literally reading these top secret documents that I have to comment on and give inputs to because I'm running this operation. So I understand exactly what you're saying and how the normal people don't understand. It's like, no, it really is that strange. Things really get that level of bizarre. But let's go back.
There's a lot of stories like that in the book, and some get even stranger. Yeah. Somebody a stranger.
So let's come back to this thing about the Russia collusion narrative, because this is one of the things near and dear to my heart. You probably didn't know this. When I was on the transition team with Mike Flynn, my job was to be the go-between between Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Joe Dunford, General Dunford, and a guy named Mark Milley, General Milley. And that's a whole nother story. I don't want to get into that. I've had to do a ton of media. At the time we're taping this, I had to do a ton of media. Even today, as soon as I'm done here, I got to do Newsmax again regarding Mark Milley's testimony regarding the Afghan debacle. But I don't want to go down that path. What I do want to talk about is that period of November, December 2016 and early 2017, where this whole Russia collusion hoax takes off. So, Patrick, as you point out, the idea was Hillary Clinton was the person. She was going to be the designated replacement for Barack Obama. Barack Obama has often said if he could run a second and third, a third term, he would. Well, he technically got one with Biden. I don't think they're necessarily happy. What's that?
Shakespeare said, more truth is told in jest.
Yeah.
You know, when people joke, that's where they bury their what they really say.
Yeah. But let's go back. But I want to talk about the mic. So I was on the transition team. I refused to show up and be like in the seat. So I basically said, I'll do it my way. Mike was fine with that. But Patrick, I went and met with Mike. I met him at Trump Tower in the transition team area. And I pulled him out during the meeting. He briefed me on his vision for the National Security Council. I was actually meeting with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Joe Dunford. When the official announcement came that Mike was picked to be the National Security Advisor. Matter of fact, I texted with Mike while I was having dinner with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and said, hey, I just got word. What do you want me to tell Joe about, anything you want me to tell Joe? And basically, Mike texted me, Patrick, you can get this. Mike Flynn texted me and said, tell Joe, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, to be prepared to tell us what he needs to win. What does he need to beat ISIS? So I told you, it's like I pulled Joe aside and showed him the text, like, hey, this is what we need to do. But my point being is that during that time, nobody expected Trump to win. Everybody was in shell shock. Everybody was just like, holy cow. This, you know, and I think they had to scramble. That includes James Comey. That includes a director of CIA, Brennan. Brennan is evil, by the way. That guy is just, I don't want to get off the track, but he's evil. And then so I met with Mike. This is like right before Christmas of 2016 in Trump Tower. And I pulled Mike outside because my friends were telling me they're going to come after Mike. So I pull Mike out in the hallway. And I, by the way, I'm not saying anything I've not told Mike to his face. Don't be taking me. This is me talking behind Mike's back. I said, Mike, they're going to come after you. What do you mean? They're pissed that they fired you. You know, Jim Clapper hates you. John Brennan hates you. They fired you and you're coming back to be in charge. They're going to come after you. I don't have time for this. Well, Mike, you better make time for this, because if you don't, you're going to suffer the consequences of them coming after you. And he said, Tony, my job is to set up policies for that man down the hall. Trump was down the hall. It's like, it doesn't matter. They're going to come after you. And for better or for worse, Mike was very dismissive. He thought that his being a blue dog Democrat gave him some sort of a protective force around him, which you and I both know didn't exist. So
about that, this is Marxist takeover. They don't care.
Well, that's my point. So I don't think anybody, even Mike, could conceive they would be so vicious using the Russia collusion narrative to undermine Trump to the point of where it was a coup d'etat. Do you agree with that?
Yes. First thing I'll say is I've gotten to know General Flynn over the last three.
Yeah, and I love Mike. Mike's a great guy. I love him.
I love him. One of the first things he said, well, not first things, but after we knew each other a few months, he told me something about himself that is actually something I would say about myself. He said his biggest mistake in his career was being too nice. And that's mine. Yeah. I've always felt that I'm working with people and we're all in together trying to do something together, achieve something together. And you just have trouble believing that there are people on your team,
yes,
that while you're trying to build something, they're trying to build alliances and scheme and stuff. You can't believe anyone could be like that, but they're there.
Right.
They're great.
Right.
Let me tell you something. I want to know about the Russian collusion delusion that is walked through very carefully in my book. The Russian collusion delusion didn't start with Trump. It really started about 3 months before Trump came down an escalator. It really was kicked off then. They were setting it up on Cruz, Rubio, and then Trump. And whoever emerged in the Republicans was going to walk into a Russian collusion scandal. And I know that because I'm the guy. So Russian redhead, Maria Butina?
Yeah.
They knew about her the day she landed. The day she landed in America, she approached me and asked me to give a speech. You know that famous speech where she asked Donald Trump a question in the auditorium? That's where they played that 100 times on. I was at that same libertarian conference, but I spoke 2 days earlier, 3 days earlier. Maria approached me. We talked. I reported her to Washington, D.C., and I was later told that it was a flare. The feds were all over her from the day after she landed. The feds were all over her when she asked Donald Trump that question. They had me doing things like this. They told me Chris Christie reached out to me and said he wanted to meet me. He was a candidate. And they said, call your Russian friend and bring her. And when she reports it back in Moscow, your stock will go up. So I brought Maria to this meeting with Chris Christie for an hour. I left her outside for about 55 minutes. I brought her in for the last 5 minutes. I found out later that on that basis, they got a FISA on Chris Christie and listened to him and his everyone close to him. So they were using the whole Maria Butina thing was smudging up. I knew that really since March 2015, they were working on smudging up the Republican Party. Didn't matter who came forward, it didn't have to be Donald Trump. And I know that for a fact. That's when they had me step away and go bribe Hillary Clinton. I was working for James Comey, John Brennan, and Barack Obama. And they were using, the handlers were using their names with me as they gave me these instructions. That these are at their personal request. So I seduced her. I mean, she's a wonderful girl. I don't mean to disrespect her. We had an affair.
Well, I can't complain. I mean, look, spying is spying, you know. So what can I say?
She was living with some Republican guy in D.C., but we had sort of 4 or 5 times we met in different weekends and had a tryst. It was my way of sort of keeping up on her and also steering her as they told me to steer her. That whole thing was producer driven. Whole thing was right. producer driven. Then they had me bribe Hillary Clinton. Now, if you want to get, so those are two of the four stories, but the whole yeah. Russian thing I explained in the book from the beginning, I'm the agent used in Russian collusion matter. The entire thing was a hoax. It was all a setup. And I say that you couldn't get more inside the Russian scandal than I was. And I promise you, it was yeah. all a hoax.
So, no, I'm with you. And I was not on the inside like you were, but I saw the patterns. I understand. It's like I see things. And that's one of the reasons I've been kind of kept in the loop right. on things. And to that point,
when you work in your field, you see these patterns and it all kind of leaps out. It's hard to see others don't see.
Yeah. It's like, you know, remember those old posters you used to sell where you could look at it and see the 3D shape in it? You know, yeah. once you see the shape, you can see it. It's like that. It's like you see and, oh, there exactly. it is. I see it now. And so I saw the patterns and I went on the record. And as a matter of fact, Ed Henry, Ed is my friend and he used to be on Fox. When on this, I think it was the 6th of March of 2017, I got a call from Fox News and they said, hey, you need to come down because Trump just tweeted that he was wiretapped at Trump Tower. So I went on the air. You can still track it down. I called my sources on the drive in from Springfield, Virginia into DC. And they said, yep, Trump's telling the truth. And here's the things that were involved. So I went on the air on the 6th of March of 2017, Patrick, and said, we're going to come to find this is all a fiction. And at the time, people went nuts. They thought I was nuts because I'm saying, no, there's nothing there. And yet you and I both know there was never anything there. It was all a fiction. And that's one of the great things that people will find out in your book.
You want to hear the great denouement of the story?
Sure.
The great... you got to read the book to hear this in detail. But when they came back and did this thing with Hillary Clinton, they sat there. When they finished, they said, now, when we tell you, Patrick, that you have to erase every moment of this from that memory of yours, we're telling you it's a matter of life or death. We're telling you. And so they were threatening my life. So I decided to go extra legal. Now, we got to wrap up here. But if you want the great secret, it's that what I did in retaliation is I later came to inform them that I had drugged and raped Maria Butina. And then I offered to kill her. And I put them all in the position for them to continue the Russian hoax. They had to either stop the hoax, they had to arrest me, or someone had to sign off. Barack Obama signed off on the aggravated rape and murder of Maria Butina. It's the biggest secret in the U.S. government, I'm told. They're trying to figure out how to contain it when this gets out. Well, I'm doing them the favor. I just broke it in my story here. I had a letter that said I couldn't be prosecuted. I've been sent by the Senate Judiciary Committee to investigate them. They didn't know that. When they put me in this position, I created this gambit. Why didn't touch Maria? And she's confirmed this. I was the most perfect gentleman.
She does the forward to your book.
Barack, Barack Obama signed off on the rape and aggravated rape and possible murder of Maria Butina. That happened October 2016, which is the same month that your man Trump was getting in so much trouble for saying something locker room on a, you know, Access Hollywood.
Yeah, of course.
He said that Barack Obama signed off on the aggravated. There's three federal agents who have a letter from President Obama, presidential finding, telling him to ignore their belief that I had drugged, raped, and was going to murder Maria so that we continue the setup. I set up a sting on the deep state and they fell for it. And Maria's already confirmed this was all totally a hoax. I set up Barack Obama, James Comey, and John Brennan, and they signed off on the rape and murder of Maria Butina. And I've been told by agencies, this is the biggest secret that they're all trying to figure out how are we going to spin this. John Brennan, James Comey, and Barack Obama signed off even after they believed I had drugged and raped and was planning on murdering her and offering to do it. They signed off.
I don't doubt it. No, these people are evil. Well, anyway, we have to leave it there for the first half of the show. We're here with Patrick Byrne. His book is Danger Close, Domestic Extremist Number One Comes Clean. Patrick Byrne. Patrick, we're going to take a break here and come back to the show in just a moment.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to AmericaOutLoud.shop. That's AmericaOutLoud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
The buildup of spike proteins is dangerous to your health. Global Healing's Foreign Protein Cleanse detoxes your body, removing the spike proteins, allowing your body to repair from within. Formulated by Dr. Edward Group and by Dr. Brian Artis, Foreign Protein Cleanse targets and detoxes spike proteins in the body. Go to AmericaOutLoud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Lifestyle changes are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created heart and vascular health to support cholesterol and blood pressure with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com. Code out loud for 25% off.
Expert opinions, honest debate, and in-depth investigations are what you've come to expect from AmericaOutLoud.news. We don't shy away from speaking the truth boldly and plainly. All that's missing is the propaganda that has infected legacy and social media. Get the best of down and dirty, wholesome American speak. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Hey, this is the Hard Truth, Tony Schaefer, part two. Still powered by 6 Hour. Never, ever settle. I had a choice what I carry in combat. I always carry the best. I carry the best now. And that best is 6 Hour. So we are on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network, also available on the podcast network. Check us out, projectsentinel.com and .net. A shout out to our friend, Cherie Curry. God bless you, Cherie. Cherie does our bumper music and theme. So she's out there fighting a good fight with us. And then also, new sponsor today, Swiss America. So one of the things I'm always talking about, and I do a lot of talking, as you guys know, that's why I have a radio show, is the need to have security. I think one of the best ways to have security is to actually have coins. Coins are an important resource, especially regarding if things happen that you can't control. So one of the things Swiss America offers is silver walking Liberty half dollars. So I think that you need to look at this. These things are at the price of $13.50 each delivered. That's $13.50 each delivered. A limit of $250 per customer while supplies last. Look, I think having a physical resource of silver, I have silver in my safe, and I'm not kidding. This is a great opportunity to put something in your portfolio and have security now. So call 800-289-2646. 800-289-2646. Or to get some of your limited supply of these Liberty half dollars, silver walking half dollars, which are very important as a resource to have. Again, you something breaks down, you don't have a paper currency, silver will work. Trust me on that. You need to have it. So yep. Again, get your share of the silver dollars or silver Liberty half dollars. Again, special availability, limited supply, and I'm not joking, it is limited. Call 800-289-2646, 800-289-4646. Back to Patrick Byrne. Patrick and his book, Danger Close, domestic extremist number one. Patrick, we really enjoyed our conversation with you the first half of the show. We're going to continue now. We're actually joined by my colleagues, the monosymbolic. What is that?
Monosymbolic, I guess. I don't know.
That's right. Monosymbolic. Chris Cordani, and the compendia. I'm picking these big words and I can't even say them. Compendious. Oh, compendious. Elizabeth Breckenkamp. So, compendious. Elizabeth and Chris, welcome to the part two of the show. So,
big words for the day. Yes.
Big words for the day. So, anyway, so Patrick, we want to continue our conversation. One of the notable things I wanted to mention is you talked about Maria. I actually had a similar thing where I didn't get to actually date the Russian, but a woman named Anna Chapman?
Oh, yeah.
So Anna, I was on her list to be targeted. The FBI came and did a briefing to my boss at my old think tank, the Center for Advanced Defense Studies. They did an orientation briefing where they basically came in and briefed my boss and me that, oh, by the way, you're being targeted by this Russian ring. And the guidance was very similar. It's like, don't say no. If she comes, approaches you, we want, you know. And next thing you know, within 2 weeks, they broke the ring and sent her out. But I know for a fact that these things go on because as a spy, I was going to be targeted by them. So I know that this is something that's done. That's something that I don't want to say it's routine, but it's much more pervasive than people understand. So I think it's great that you have this book that people can go read. I've not read the whole book, but I will. The pieces you've talked about, I find completely understandable and completely realistic based on my own experience. So, but I'll open up to the floor. Elizabeth, do you have something you want to talk about and bring up regarding the whole thing with Patrick?
Well, I have not read the whole book either, but I was looking it up on Amazon. Since we have the link right here, and just reading through the intro where it says, hailed as the Messiah of Bitcoin, once lauded as the National Entrepreneur of the Year 2011, and then it says, reveals an astonishing twist in August 2019, your role as a secret operative. So with all these, you know, you also founded Overstock. I'm just wondering, when you got to the point where you realized, I need to write this in a book or else no one will believe me. Was that really your driving force to write it? And what was really the most difficult thing about actually writing this? What was your biggest challenge?
Well, the biggest challenge, I did it because I think our country's, our republic is hung by a thread and I got no choice. And I know a lot of what really happened. I've given you guys just a thumbnail. I know a lot of what really happened. And I thought, I'm not going to sit quiet. I'm going to come clean and get this to the public. What was it with the next part of your question? I'm sorry, Elizabeth, what was the next part of your question?
Just the most challenging thing. But also what?
It's like being in the mob and coming out.
I guess there was like two things. Yeah. What really spurred you on to write it? And then what was the most difficult thing in actually writing it and getting it published?
Well,
was it hard to find someone to publish it?
No, I didn't even give it to one person, and they took care of it. It was that it's actually being kind of, as Tony knows, it's somewhat like being in the mob.
And yes. Then there's this
I'm now saying this with facility. When I first started trying to talk about this, I had such a knot in my stomach, I couldn't even get the words out as to what I was involved in, what was going on, because it's so ingrained in your DNA that you don't share any of this. But so breaking that, on the other hand, I know the people I work for are engaging in a slow coup to this day. The fake election, everything was all perfect, and I don't have any choice. My country's coming to an end if I don't speak up. So,
there we are. Patrick, that's one of the things I want to bring up real quick, is that so much of what I did as an operative, We were doing really advanced technology stuff back in the late 90s, early 2000s, with the belief and presumption that the things we were doing were focused on bad guys. One of the things I knew from talking with Mike Flynn and working with him during that time, many of the things we developed against foreign targets were being turned on the American people, like you saw firsthand with John Brennan and all these other guys. So it was very disconcerting to find, and that's one of the reasons I'm fighting the battle against the deep state, is because the very things we helped develop that were supposed to help protect Americans are now being used against Americans. Do you feel the same way about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're going through a soft coup. We're going through a soft coup. And I'm sure you know what a Bezmenov PSYOP is. Demoralization, disorientation, crisis, normalization. For us, the demoralization was the whole COVID nonsense. Disorientation was Antifa, Trantifa, all that stuff. The crisis was the fake election. And now we're normalization is what they call cancel culture. So we're just going through a Bezmenov PSYOP to end the United States, and a bunch of Marxist goons are going to take it over. I've lived in communist countries. I lived in China back in 83, 84. I have a lot of respect for Chinese and for lots of reasons, but I think we don't want what I saw China as it was coming out of the Cultural Revolution. And I feel what we're seeing now is a cultural revolution in our country, a very meticulously planned cultural revolution.
So I think one thing that's really important to note is you talked about, and you discussed this at length in the book, about how Barack Obama tried to control the next two presidents. The idea was to get Hillary in there, make sure she's a, as you put in the book, good girl for a little while. And then when Michelle Obama becomes president, you have six terms in effect of Barack Obama. That's 24 years, and he probably passed it down. The thing is, though, when the voters, the American people, threw the monkey wrench in that plan, they still, the deep state still went ahead with their psyops. They still went ahead with trying to push this whole thing. And thus, in 4 years, after hammering the Trump is a racist thing, this or that, and trying to burn minority villages down through St. Floyd's garbage here, and all those riots, all of a sudden, they bring in another puppet, a whole different guy all around.
Mm-hmm.
But they still plowed through, and that's something that's important to note.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all being... Biden, it's hardly even, you can't even think of Biden as a puppet as the same way Obama is. Obama's not a puppet in the same way. If he's a robot, he's a robot with a lot of intelligence and AI, and he can do stuff. If he's Biden's a totally different kind of puppet. He's a wooden puppet with some strings on him. He doesn't, we all know who knows how much he's even present.
Well, although like Jeff Dunham and Jeff Dunham's puppets. He looks just like one of them, with the squinty eyes.
Patrick, that's one of the things. As we speak right now, there's hearings right now where Tony Bobulinski, Joe Biden, the Hunter Biden associates, laying out saying, no, Joe Biden was fully witting. Do you think the whole bribery scheme that they used with Biden was meant to do the snow globe operation for Biden the way that they were going to do with Hillary Clinton?
No, they already control. They already control Biden. They didn't need anything like that to control him. There's something else in the book about bribery and Biden. I'll give you right here. I was meeting with Iran two years ago at the request of our government before the war broke out. I'm close to the Iranian government. You're going to laugh, Tony, but I knew Qasem Soleimani. He was quite good to me when he had me do Iran, and the Quds forces were my boys. They protected me.
That guy operated. No, I get it. I get it.
And and I can tell you that what was going on in two and a half years ago, Hunter Biden was reaching out through a back channel to the Iranians. And it's a guy the son of the Minister of Defense of Pakistan. And I think they play golf together. They make on Georgetown together. And he gives him messages. And then that guy goes out in the world and does it. And this guy was approaching the Iranians with an offer. He was saying, so Hunter was saying through him to the Iranians, you folks have, I thought it was $8 billion, maybe it was $6 billion frozen in a South Korean bank. My father will sign to unfreeze that in return for 10% being kicked back to us in a numbered account. And quote, if you will do this deal, it will lubricate the other discussions which have recently started between us, unquote.
Yep.
Well, that referred to the JCPOA had recently started. So the Bidens were basically saying, if you kick us back 10% of $8 billion, then in our nuclear discussions, we'll do something else. If you want to keep 10 nukes, you pay us this. If you want to keep 20 nukes, you pay us this. So they're selling out. And I have proof of this, by the way. I have proof.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me that Congress is chasing the FBI over some 302 that somebody allegedly filed in 2015 about something they heard somebody else say. Here you got a guy, firsthand witness. I'm the agent who met with the Iranians, met him again 18 months ago, met with him 2 years ago. And in the course of my visit, I was given this information, and I was actually acquired proof of it. So very strong documentation. And Congress is so wrapped up in their underwear and dumb.
Look, I'm a whistleblower. I've seen it firsthand, Patrick. No, Patrick, I was a whistleblower. I've dealt with Congress and staffs. I get it completely. So
you think Steve Bannon would have appreciated you a lot more? I got to tell you.
I mean, Bannon,
you go into the book. You said that there was a big animosity between the two of you, but you seem like the guy that he would appreciate. It's not true.
It's weird, but 6 years ago, I heard from the New York Times that Steve Bannon was in here talking about you, Patrick Byrne, and he says you should be president. He says you're the most amazing mayor, all this stuff. I said, that's weird. I didn't even know this guy knows my name. But he came out in late 2020 and has told everybody not to talk to Pat Byrne, not to listen to him. He's crazy.
It's weird. I don't get it. I don't get it.
You know what
people
else
will turn on you.
And you know what else is weird about this? Well, he had a very close friend who told me that Bannon's very jealous of me is one thing. But
Focused on what Bannon can do. I think if you're not right in his universe, I know Steve, I get along with him well, but I'm not in his little cluster of friends. So, you know,
tell you something, Roger,
is what it is.
But Roger Stone, who I'm not close to, but told me.
I know Roger too. I don't know him well. Yeah.
He said that his entire legal problems were caused because Steve Bannon, one time under oath, said, Roger Stone and I never discussed WikiLeaks. And then another time under oath, he said, Roger Stone and I discuss WikiLeaks all the time. It was totally contradictory testimony. It was based on that one change. He had 7 indictments against him. Wow. So, it's true. It's 95% of what Steve Bannon says, I agree with. I think the guy's right on everything. People think we're separated at birth. The truth is we can't be in the same room. He has
I get it. No, yeah. I'm okay with that too. No, look, like I said, that's why you're on our show. We don't care what anybody else thinks. We want to talk to you and we appreciate your insight. It's great.
Exactly. So.
Yeah.
But what we do care about Tony's takes.
And it is
that time again.
Is it that time?
It is. And Tony's takes is powered by Sig Sauer. Never settle or never
settle.
Ever settle. How about that?
Never settle.
Never settle.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
All right. I was having fun watching Generals Milley and McKenzie answering to Congress yesterday. I'm sure you enjoyed that sport as well. Take a couple takeaways of mine I want to get your thoughts on. Ready? One, Biden's promise on TV in August 2021 to get everybody out by the 31st of the same month was moronic at best and impossible at worst. Also, number two, a number of Democrats tried to blame the failure on, Donald Trump. And number three, nobody was held accountable. What's your take?
So, well, I think, first off, Joe Biden being as old as he is, time has a different meaning to him. So when he gives a date, that generally means in glacial years, like, 100-year segment. So he meant like, sometime in the next glacial period is what he really meant. And regarding getting people out, the only thing, and Patrick can probably back me up on this, he meant get them out as soon as he gets their 10%. That is to say, as soon as that he gets his 10%, as soon as you grease the palms, then, Joe will jump in and help. But other than that, he's got a whole, I can't do anything unless I get my, 10%. And by the way, just a note on Mark Milley. Mark, if you're listening, that Crisco only diet really did the trick. I think you look more healthy than ever. Not only, does it put the weight on, it gives you kind of that sheen too, that kind of,
glow.
That porcine
glow.
That's right. That's right.
All right.
You're a funny guy, Tony. You're a funny guy.
I concur.
Here's a funny story for all of you, okay? I want to get all your takes on this. First, we'll lead off with Tony, obviously. A woman in New York City inherited a home, okay? Queens, right? Squatters moved in a few days before she checked in and took a look at it. Yeah. She tried to get them arrested. Police took them, but they told her not to change the locks. She did change the locks. The squatters broke into the house, breaking the door and everything. She called the coppers again, and guess what? She gets arrested.
Right.
That's right. These squatters have too many rights as it is. And by the way, they weren't in there for that 30-day requirement. What's your take, Tony?
So I think New York has gone too far. I think at this point that he should do what they're encouraging her to do. And she should open up the house to illegal immigrants. So you want to be a squatter? Fine. I'm going to give you 50 of my best friends who are coming in from the southwest border to put them in a house. Let me tell you, Chris, you know, if they're going to be squatters, let's give them all the squatters they want. That's the way I would do it.
A sanctuary house.
There you go. Patrick, what do you say?
Go ahead, Elizabeth, first.
I was just going to say she needs to get a concealed carry permit and learn how to use a weapon. But then, of course, she'd probably end up being arrested for shooting them for defending herself. So
the common denominator of all the left ideas is they think that they can make the world a lot better. They have these ambitious plans for how to make the world better. And they see a lot of the things that we believe in as just unnecessary fetters on their grand ambitions and plans. Yep. One of those things being, say, the Constitution, another being property rights. These things keep government limited. They don't want limited government. They want a government that can do all the ambitious things they want. So they have to erode and degrade anything that restricts the government. That means every principle of the Constitution, and it means property rights. They have to degrade.
You're absolutely right.
That's what it's all about. The common denominator is always they don't want anything that limits. They don't like limited government because it gets in the way of their ambitious government.
That's exactly right. Yeah,
exactly. The left making the world a better place for them to live in.
Right.
Speaking of the far left. All right. Get this. I wanted to go to the France thing, but this is even funnier, Tony. Okay. Canada's Justin Trudeau decided to take a stand. He cut off arms sales to Israel. Now, really, will a few less maple syrup bombs move the dial in the Gaza war at all? Seriously?
I'm just hoping he cuts off his eyebrows because those things, I think they look better. I wouldn't cut off arms sales. I'd cut off eyebrows. Just saying. I think he'd look better. And by the way, does anybody doubt that his dad wasn't Fidel Castro? I mean, if you just look at the two guys who are supposed to be his dad. I mean, I don't know.
Can I ask Tony a question
now? Patrick? Yeah.
Go ahead.
On Israel, I feel like obviously Hamas, this wasn't just any normal attack. By doing it like they did and raping and killing kids and stuff, they wanted Israel to respond. There's somebody out there. See, to me, this is all a kabuki dance that the world is being walked through. The Israeli part of it is just one scene in that kabuki theater. Somebody wanted this to happen, and they had Gaza do that in a way that it would be impossible for Israel to do any kind of contained response. They had to do something massive. They had 1,500 people killed. They had hundreds of women raped and stuff. So somebody wanted them to do that. Who is that person, and how does this fit into their bigger objective? If this is Russia and China pulling the strings, which I think it is, how does getting Israel to go thermonuclear on Gaza play into their bigger plan?
Well, it's a sump of resources and time and focus, obviously. Patrick, like you, whenever something like this happens, I always look around to see what we're not supposed to be looking at, because they're always doing something else over here. It's like pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, and they're overdoing something else. So there's always, as you know, whatever they're doing publicly, they're always doing something else privately that you need to be really paying attention. It's like this whole thing with Barack Obama showing up at 10 Downey Street. You and I both know if Obama wanted to meet with Cernak, they would do it at a cigar bar in Chelsea in downtown London. They wouldn't do it. They wouldn't have him showing up public like that. That was meant to send a signal of some sort.
Right. You're right. Yeah.
Was that supposed to help Sunak, or what do you think that was about?
I think it was meant to reassure world leaders that despite Joe Biden's frailed appearance, that Barack Obama is still the guy. Can we talk about Obama real quick, I guess, since we brought him up regarding the Cernak meeting? I think Barack Obama, is another guy who is still the conduit. And Patrick, check me on this if you think. I don't think Barack Obama is even the guy in charge. I think he's still a mouthpiece for others. Barack Obama seems to be pretty focused and pretty suave, but I think some other folks are pushing his buttons. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's the whole Soros, the WEF. He's been the front leading edge of the WEF takedown of the U.S. And that's something that the WEF and China have partnered on. Now, they have a dispute about who gets to do what after it collapses, but they are partnered on taking us down.
Yeah. So I agree. And I think that's the issue we have to be focused on, is the fact that there are larger forces that exist. It's so funny. You know, there's that great line in Kevin Spacey says it when he plays Kaiser Sose. The greatest trick the devil ever did was to make people convinced he didn't exist. And I think that's all what this is about. They're trying to convince people that they don't exist. So we need to wrap up now, but it's been a great show. Patrick, it's gone fast, and it's so cool to have met you. I'd like to have you come back if it's okay. Is that okay with you? Would you come back at some point?
I'll come back. I'll read your book. You read mine, and I'll come back.
All right. Talk. We'll do that. Yeah. That's a deal.
Dual book review.
Dual book review. That's right. We'll be fun. It'll be fun.
I love it.
But it's, I know. People got upset with me while you had your tryst with the Russian person that you talk about. I actually gave a full body massage to a sergeant in combat, which got me in a lot of trouble, but I would still do it again. Just saying. It was a lot of fun. So,
was there happy later.
Oh my goodness. It was fun. No, I got yelled at for a full hour by a 2-star general of the Pentagon over admitting that. It was great. So anyway, I would do it again. All right. But enough hilarious. No, I'm serious. You know,
I believe you. I'm just laughing.
General Arnold, he was not happy about my honesty about, it was fun. What can I say?
So
we got to go. Yeah. We got to go. It's been another great show of The Hard Truth with Tony Schaefer. There's with a lot of hard truth with Patrick Byrne, who wrote the book, Danger Close, Domestic Extremist Number One Comes Clean. Patrick, thanks for being here. It was a great show. Great discussion. And of course, Elizabeth and Chris, it was fun having you all on. And we'll be back again next week with another great guest. Until then, check out our sponsors. Do the things that you need to do to protect yourself. Be prepared. And we'll see you again real soon.